the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanti Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Sri Sonam Tenzin Gyamso. Sri Sonam joined the erstwhile Sri Sathya Sai College of Arts, Science and Commerce in 1978 for his 11th grade and continued till his PhD in 1990 and received the degree from Bhagwan during the 65th birthday celebrations. During his stay here with Bhagwan, he was a member of the Prashanti Mandir Bhajan group, which gave him the unique privilege to sing innumerable times in the divine presence and compose many bhajans that we sing today. On his graduation, he was blessed by Swami to go out and serve as the assistant director of Sikkim Research Institute of Tibetology, after which he has been busy with many projects, some with UNICEF and the government of Nepal. Mr. Sonam has traveled extensively, working in the fields of archaeology, culture and social development. He is also actively involved in several NGOs and Sai Seva projects. He regularly visits Prashanti Nilayam and mentors young members of the Prashanti Bhajan group. Stay tuned, dear listeners. After this talk, you will be treated to some beautiful bhajans composed by Brother Sonam. After which, at 3:30 p.m., we will have the live Telugu segment, Sri Sathya Sai Divya Sandesha Jhari. And with that, over to Brother Sonam.
My loving pranams at your divine lotus feet, most beloved Bhagwan, dear sisters and brothers, Jai Sai Ram to all of you. Sometimes we used to say, Swami is tolerating us. But then how would he tolerate himself? So that's the feel. That's the truth. All that happened was when I joined as a student, there was an audition in the hostel and I was an 11th grader. And I was desperate to get into one of the groups, interest groups in the hostel. So I wanted to be included in the bhajan group. So when they put it out in the notice board that those who can play musical instruments, write down your talents. So I wrote down everything that came to my mind. I wrote down mouth organ, the harmonica, accordion, this, that. I wrote down everything so that somewhere it would stick on me. Like somewhere I would get stuck. And then I would get an entry into the bhajan group. So luckily for me, when I played the harmonium, they were happy because there was no harmonium player at that point in time. So I got my chance of playing harmonium. And that is how it is. Just recently, we were thinking about a summer camp, a winter camp in Sikkim, meant for young adults, students who had no exposure to Bhagwan at all. Lot of people think that if we tell them about Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba, these are people who have never been exposed to Swami, whose idea about Swami is so minimal. And tell them about Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba, it might appear to them to be a type of proselytization. Because sometimes, commensurate with our enthusiasm, we tend to look like a group, a Hindu group. So if we go and tell them about, proclaim about Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba, despite the fact that we are telling them, we are speaking the truth and sharing this wonderful truth about the advent of the Lord, the manifestation of the Lord, still people would, there would be tendencies among them to think that these people are preaching. So everyone decided that we are not going to use the name Sai. And Sai, we are doing a Sai program. And Sai is the progenitor, the source of our inspiration, our life. And why we are doing that in public, for these students, for their benefit definitely, is because we want them to know about Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba, and if we don't tell about Bhagwan Sai Baba, how does it go? So we had to devise some beautiful means, like these people in Dubai, they have done. They are not allowed to use the word Sai, because by government rule, You are not supposed to speak very loudly about some other religion. So they said, we are an organization called SAI, SAI. And SAI means serve and inspire. So the organization got registered, and today there are a lot of the sheikhs who are also coming and sending their children to the SSE program. It slowly happens. So when we thought of SAI, it set me thinking and it took me back in time. When one day, Swami in his discourse, actually I had brought the video clip also with me, but I am not carrying it here now, but you would have seen it. Swami so emphatically, Swami says, service, adoration, illumination, Swami says. That is SAI, SAI. The whole world, this morning we were so beautifully discussing the same point about bhakti, jnana and karma. People thought that even the Bhagavad Gita delineates three different highways to our self-realization. The highway called service, the adoration and illumination part, bhakti, jnana and karma. And a lot of people say that I'm a karma yogi, because that guy can't sing, you know. So he says that I'm a karma yogi. He doesn't understand that singing is a wonderful seva. It caters to not only the physical body, but the mind also. The emotion of a person. It gives a lot of peace to humanity. So, when I thought of that, then I thought of that tapas that I was telling you about yesterday. Training to attain perfection, awakening and Sai, when we did that. That Sai was defined by Swami as, yesterday I was telling you, do you remember still? S-A-I, Sai. See always inside, of course, but spiritual awareness of individuals. So I, all of a sudden, it struck me that Sai is so versatile. Not only in terms of his beautiful gait, his beautiful looks, his manners, but he is so versatile in every respect. Even his name is so versatile. Sai adapts to everything. Any situation, any circumstance in the world, it is all the way Sai. So when I thought of writing down a program for these people, students, young people who are yet to know about Swami, how to tell them about Swami, what might be the entry point for them. So we thought of SAI Sai, and see always inside was all the time there. But then it reminded me of, then I started recapitulating and thinking of all those beautiful moments we had spent in Prashanti Nilayam. On one of those occasions, I was at earshot when Swami was talking to the chief of the Sri Satya Sai World Organization, Mr. Indulal Shah. It happened, the whole thing happened right on the veranda. And I used to always carry a notebook like this and a pen to write down so that I shouldn't forget. So I was there with my pen and paper, and this was what was transpiring between Mr. Indulal Shah and Swami. Mr. Indulal Shah was telling Swami, Swami said, "Haan, kya problem kya hai?" He said, "Swami, bahut problem hai. Log sunte nahi hai, Swami. When you talk, when you give a discourse, people listen to it. People listen to you, Swami, but they don't listen to us. When we convey the same message, your divine message there in the organization, people just turn deaf ears. They don't listen." Swami said, "Oh, it's so simple. Are you convinced about what you are speaking?" Swami asked him. And all this for the benefit of mankind, Swami made this happen right outside, out there in public. He said, "Yes, Swami, mostly we are convinced." Swami said, you are not fully convinced about what you speak. For instance, if you tell them, prem karna hai, aisa prem karna hai bolne se kya prayojan, Swami said. If you tell them you should love everyone, what's the point? When you are not convinced that you have to love everyone. Are you convinced about love yourself? Then they will listen. See, Sri Satya Sai Baba, Swami said, when I speak with that conviction. Every word that I speak emerges from the source of conviction. And that is why people listen to me. And then Swami said, aur kya problem hai? Swami, organization mein kabhi kabhi bahut problem hota hai. Some people, you know, they disregard the rules of the organization. Swami said, this is the most organized organization, Swami said. Most disciplined organization. How can people be indisciplined in this organization? Then he said, Swami, so many of your messages we try to beam it across the world. We try to tell people. But then what about those big, huge masses of people? They are not prepared to listen to you, Swami. Then Swami said, for everything, there is a golden formula, Swami said. And then Swami was looking towards the students also. Everything so vivid in my memory. And Swami said, wo formula kya hai? Kaun bol sakta hai? And nobody had any answer. Because the formula could be anything. But Swami said, wo formula hai Sai, S-A-I, Sai, Swami said. And if the whole world, people who run huge organizations, Swami mentioned United Nations, if they would fall on Sai, resort to Sai, listen to Sai, and take an advice from Sai, every project that they do would really be crowned with success, Swami said. Everything that you do with Sai will be successful. And what is that Sai, Swami said? S is sensitization, Swami said. S is sensitization. A is awareness building. And I is implementation, Swami said. Standing right there outside, near the interview room door, to Mr. Indulal Shah. Sensitization, awareness building, and implementation. And how do you go about it? Swami then explained. If there is an issue that you want to address, you have to first sensitize that, the need for that. You have to sensitize the need, otherwise how would people know? So there are so many different methods of sensitization, Swami said. For instance, Swami said, there is a dearth of value in our education system. Then Swami was talking, telling us about that gentleman who needed a jingle for his products to be sold in Puttaparthi when Swami was a small little kid. You remember that shopkeeper's name? Kote Subbanna. And Kote Subbanna asked Swami to compose a jingle. And Swami composed a jingle which was value-based. Because anything that comes from Swami is all value-based. But the sum and substance of that was that is why you go to Kote Subbanna's shop, you get everything there. Right from a pin to everything you get in that shop. So Swami said that is sensitization. You sensitize the fact that if you need this, you go there. So if you need values in your education system, make the people around you, those who are the policy makers, the decision makers, make them aware that there is a acute dearth of values in our education system. Make them realize it. Convince them. So that is sensitization, Swami said. As a result of this sensitization program, which is so widespread, automatically, Swami said, there will be a proper awareness building. People become, the larger portion of people, they become aware of this program, aware of this problem, and the solutions that you are projecting, that you are offering. That is why, then you can tell the whole world, that is why there is need for value orientation of our education system. Then you can say, you can tell the teachers and convince, the teachers get convinced that when we prepare a lesson plan, we need to infuse values into it. We cannot teach values per se like a subject, like an academic subject, like it was happening in India once upon a time. Now NCERT is making some changes in India, the policy makers. So there is a lot of value orientation and the SAI organization is getting a huge opportunity to get into it. So Swami said, sensitization, awareness building, and once there is a fair base of awareness among the people, that there is need for this, and this is the system, and this is the way, then that is the right time for you to implement your project, Swami said. So that follows implementation. So SAI SAI also was sensitization, awareness, and implementation. Then some years back, I heard from Dr. Jum Sai that Swami had told him another beautiful formula, another beautiful acronym, like Swami said, SAI SAI is standardization, accreditation, and inspection. Standardization, accreditation, and inspection. And as I went deep into it, it applies to all our lives. Standardization. And what standards Swami has set for you and me? Can you imagine it? If we try to measure ourselves to those standards, sometimes we feel, you know, goosebumps. Am I really living up to it? We feel that way. I think I should sing some bhajans because all of you had fantastic food. It's Sai all the way, whatever we do. So the song that I was singing, Chalki Halki Teri Yaad Bhi, Dhalki Halki Wahi Baat Bhi, Ab Sochta Hu Main Raha Tanhai Ki Raat Mein, is a song written by one of our students, a junior student in Prashanti Nilayam. If this type of song, this type of lyrics, I showed this lyrics to anybody, not only the tune, apart from the tune, the song, the poetry, the poem itself stands out. It's one of the finest poetry written in Hindi. Chalki halki halki teri yaad bhi. Chalki means, can anyone tell me? It just spills out. What spills out? In a very mellow way, it spills out. What spills out is your memory, your thoughts. Thoughts about you, memories of you. Dhalki halki halki wahi baat bhi. The same memories keep haunting me again and again. Ab sochta hu main raha tanhai ki raat mein. Now that I am left all on my own. Again and again we are talking about loneliness, being left on our own. So when we are alone, when I am left alone in a very pensive mood, what happens is it makes me think. It makes me remember those beautiful past moments with you. Ab sochta hu main raha tanhai ki raat mein. Gaon mein kya dil hai bhara teri chahat ki aag mein. I am burning in the fire of my longing for you. What can I sing when the heart is full of this thought? My heart is full up to the brim with this beautiful thought. I cannot even sing. Ghire aaj bhi dil mein kahin teri aisi baatein hain. In my heart, in my mind gets invaded by these beautiful thoughts. Lab jo bayan kar na sake, aisi baatein hain. And such thoughts that cannot be expressed in merely in words. If you want, we can sing this song together. This time, a nice intro.
Thank you. जो बयां कर ना सके ऐसी बातें हैं, रब जो बयां कर ना सके ऐसी बातें हैं, छलकी हल्की हल्की तेरी याद भी हल्की 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 वही बात भी।
This song, I think, is like a lullaby. It must have put you to fall asleep.
Mata Maheshwari Tribhuvan Janani. Mata Maheshwari Tribhuvan Janani. Maheshwari Tribhuvan Janani Premamayi Satya Sai Janani.
For a very long time, I was praying to Swami. So I wanted to compose a bhajan in Yaman. And mostly all the Yamans that I had heard sounded almost the same. You know,
Krishna Krishna Mana Mohana Pantarju Antiju.
All bhajans sounded the same. I was telling Swami, please give me a tune which sounds slightly, at least in the beginning, sounds different from the rest of the Yaman songs. And a song which begins with the Nishad. Because most of the song... I wanted to start a bhajan on me. And there was a bhajan singer named Arun Kumar Tiwari, who was a very good Carnatic singer. And Swami spent hours on Arun Kumar Tiwari to teach him Carnatic classical songs like Tyagraj, Muthuswami, you know. And so many songs Swami taught him. And we used to keep looking at Swami and him sitting there. And then this guy learning songs from Ramanandu Brovara. And, you know, we used to listen to these songs. Nagamomu. This Arun Tiwari wanted to sing a new bhajan before Swami. And he asked me to compose a bhajan. And this was the bhajan which was composed. Mata Maheshwari Tribhuvan Janani. And as I was telling him the song in the music room, Kumar just barged in. And he said, what about a song for me? You know, imagine that immense inspiration. And then I said, for you also, Swami will give a bhajan. But at that time, I didn't say Swami will give a bhajan. At that time, I said, for you also, I'll compose a bhajan. Because the sense of doership was so high at that time. And people used to tell me, you have to chip off your nose because it hits everywhere. Then the next composition for him, soon after, like a sequel to this, was the bhajan. This bhajan I composed, and he told me those days Swami used to ask for an alap. Swami used to call it alap only. And Swami would say the alap should reach the sky. It should go high and high, and Swami used to spiral up and make gestures like that. Swami would say. So we wanted something very big, bang, high. And
Prashanti Nilaya Nivasa Arjay Suno Meri Sai Arjay Suno Meri Parama Kripa.
This bhajan was composed then. And the day he sang, he's an open singer. His voice just rings out. And that day, even the hills of Prashanti Nilayam around Puttaparthi, the hills of Puttaparthi, they were thrilled. It was such a beautiful rendition. And the first day itself, the song stood the test of time. And Swami made all the gestures of approval, and the song got approved. But just a word of caution to everyone who sings this bhajan. Kindly don't sing,
Arjay Suno Meri.
The tune is,
Arjay Suno Meri.
So we have to sing it that way. Most of the, now it has become common.
Arjay Suno Meri.
There is a difference between, the difference is the difference between ni and da. So coming back to S.A.I. Sai, that I won't leave that Sai because it's so beautiful. I was telling you about standardization, accreditation, and inspection. And now this is not only for value orientation of education, not only for values education, but something meant for our lives. It can make our life. Can you imagine if we just apply this Sai, we realize the Sai. Just apply this Sai to our life. Think of the standards that Swami has laid down for you and me. Swami one day said, there is only one synonym for Sai. And what's that? Last time I was telling you. In the flow I was telling you about the synonym for Sai. Perfection, Swami said. There is only one word, perfection. And then somebody said, Swami, you are God. You are perfect. How can we be perfect? Swami said, you are a relative God, so you can be relatively perfect, Swami said. I am not asking you to be divinely perfect. That's the absolute perfection. That state of being. At our level of becoming, our state of becoming, we can be perfect. So strive for that perfection, Swami said. Those are Swami's standards. And if we think of those standards and measure up every day, it's a beautiful measure for us to understand, you know, it's a yardstick for us to understand, I'll measure my own progress in my spiritual endeavor. So, standardization. Accreditation. Now, who gives us accreditation? Because there is no one who can accreditate what I have done in my life, my accomplishments. Because Swami says, most of the time you are a private limited company. And private because you are all the time very selfish, living a very self-centered life. And Swami says, papam doesn't matter, because that is how it is in the scheme of things. We were born to eat for ourselves, sleep for ourselves, do everything for myself. Yesterday we were talking to our SSE students and I was telling them the same thing. So throughout life, I have done everything. I have slept for myself. I ate for myself. I enjoyed for myself. I can't do it for anyone else. By default, I have to live my own life. Which goes to say that I was born alone and I have to live alone. When somebody in Puttaparthi was giving a talk and he dwelt so much on 10 minutes time he had been given, one of our students, and you know we revel in that when we are given 10 minutes to speak, we are thrilled. And this boy, he said, Swami tells us about love my uncertainty. So today I'll give you a few instances of how to love his uncertainty. How to understand his uncertainty. And Swami, as the divine master and the loving mother, he didn't catch him in public. He didn't tell him anything in public. After his talk, after Swami's discourse, when Swami was going in, Swami just drew him aside. And Swami said, what were you talking about today? Love my uncertainty? I am the only factor which is certain, Swami said. Rest, everything is uncertain. Then Swami was telling him a story from Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. And this story, I'll just narrate it to you. It's a beautiful story. Swami said, Ramakrishna, the master, used to wait for Rakhal. And Rakhal had to wait through, he had to cross the river and reach Dakshineshwar, River Ganges and reach Dakshineshwar. And by the time he would reach in the evening, the master would be just, you know, walking up and down and pacing up and down and seemingly waiting for him. So one day, he didn't get his ferry. So by the time he got a boat and then reached the shore and reached Dakshineshwar, he was quite late. So he was just regretting and telling himself that the master, I must have made him wait. I must have kept him waiting for me. So he reached there and told Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, Master, I'm so sorry, because Ramakrishna Paramahamsa was pacing up and down. And he thought that he must be feeling, you know, he must be waiting and waiting and waiting for me. And he said that, Master, I made you wait for such a long time, please forgive me. Ramakrishna Paramahamsa said, I never waited for you. And I never wait for you. What makes you think that I'm waiting for you? So Rakhal said, he was mortally hurt. So he thought that, I thought my master waits for me every day. So that is the inspiration for me, for my running all the way here and reaching the master every evening. But now he tells me that he doesn't wait for me. And then Ramakrishna Paramahamsa said, actually I was waiting definitely, but I was waiting for my death. And Rakhal said, Ram, how can you speak such a thing? Apshakun, you shouldn't speak like that. I can't even imagine living without you, Master. He said, no, sooner or later we all have to leave. So why do we feel bad about that? Death and birth are the only certain things. And life, everything, anything that happens in between life and death are uncertain. So about this uncertainty of life, you know, when we think about accreditation, Swami tells us that you have to validate yourself. You have to accreditate yourself every moment. Because no power, no one in this world can for certain tell you that you have reached, these are your benchmarks. You have reached so high in your spiritual elevation, your progress. No one can tell you that. Because you have been living your own life. You have your own estimate. Only you can estimate your own progress. So you should be truthful to yourself. If you want to be honest, it is said, be truthful. And if you want to be truthful, be yourself. So if I want to be truthful, I have to be myself first. If I cheat myself, if I deceive myself, if I get into self-deception, then there is no chance for me to progress in spirituality. It sounds like a sequel to this morning's beautiful talk by Dr. Gomez. So, accreditation and inspection. And Swami said, constant vigil is so important for you. Sai inspires you to be very vigilant and see to it that wrong things don't enter you. Wrong thoughts don't enter you. You have to see to it that you are all the time inspecting yourself in and out. So Swami said, SAISI is standardization, inspection, accreditation and inspection, SAISI, so versatile. So I was thinking that there must be so many other you know, dimensions of SAI, if we think about it. Can you think of any SAISI? Anything that comes to your mind? See always inside, we have already said. Spiritual awareness of individuals. That is J-O-Y, joy. Yeah. Jesus first, others next, you last. Beautifully Swami has said. In the same strain, yeah. But any S-A-I that comes to your mind? Which one, sir? Fantastic. I'll add it here immediately. Source of all information. Because this is going to help us in our winter course in Sikkim, which we are going to do now. So source of all inspiration is so beautiful. So like that, it keeps multiplying. Yeah. Oh my God, you have to say it again. Beautiful. Did you write it just now? Oh, fantastic. It sounds so beautiful. So I'll just take you back in time a little bit because somebody wanted me to share some experiences also. You must have heard this Tadpatri experience. Tadpatri. There is a place called Tadpatri in Andhra Pradesh, which is very famous for its lime. You know chuna? Chunam we make for tapan. So it's very famous for lime. And once upon a time, there used to be a merchant from Tadpatri who used to frequent Prashanti Nilayam to do business. And once in a while, have Swami's darshan also. That was secondary. The primary thing was he was doing business. He was selling lime there in the market outside. And a part of that lime, he used to make some special lime for Swami. And that used to be a very fragrant pink colored lime, which was meant exclusively for Swami. And we in the hostel, we had the prerogative to prepare Swami's pan box. You know what is pan box? The silver box in which Swami would keep his pan ki patti, the betel leaves. And we used to take turns to dice the betel leaves, wash it properly, clean them up properly, and then arrange them neatly inside the pan box. And then there would be this small, tiny little silver container, and we used to fill it up with that Tadpatri lime and then place it right inside. There used to be a small spoon-like thing, spatula, to take out the chunam. And then very delicately with a handkerchief, white handkerchief, and there was a whole department taking care of Swami's handkerchief. Department of handkerchief in the hostel. Where else in the world would you even hear a thing like that? A department of peanuts. So this Swami's room used to prepare peanuts for the birthday boy. And in Prashanti Nilayam, almost every day everyone had a birthday. Because Swami would invariably come and then pick up the akshata, the lemon rice, the turmeric rice, and then throw it on the birthday boys. So a lot of people would, you know, prepone their birthdays, and then come there, and Swami would say, yesterday also you are sitting here. You have a birthday every day? Do you have a birthday every day? And that boy would just nod his head and say, yes, Swami. And Swami said, very good. And once again, this has happened so many times. In fact, one day, one of our batchmates, Rajgopal, do you remember Rajgopal, the athlete? Rajgopal was one guy, you teach him one thing, and then you had to learn it back from him. He would progress so much on it. He would delve so deep into it. He learned tabla from somebody, and then he became the tabla player. Like, he accompanied some of the greatest luminaries in Indian classical music. And a very fantastic person, human being. So it was his last day for Swami's darshan, because he was leaving the Prashanti University for good and going back to his hometown in Chennai. He was craving for a grace of Bhagwan, for Pad Namaskar or something. So both of us, we sat together right in the front. And those days Swami used to do CTC. You know what is CTC? Chocolate throwing ceremony. So we used to offer chocolates. Birthday boys would bring so much chocolate. And lovingly we used to call, we used to take Swami just like our own parent. And we were just frolicking and running around, playing there, right, just in his house. That was our home. So the chocolate throwing ceremony along with the turmeric rice. So there were a lot of people sitting there, and there was a very good, fair chance for Rajgopal to get at least some akshata, some turmeric rice on him. So we sat together, and Swami came out, and he just half stood up to tell Swami that, Swami, I am leaving. Pad Namaskar, Swami. Swami didn't even look at him. Swami ignored him completely and walked towards the birthday boys. And there was Professor Radha Swami also that day. Along with the birthday boy, everyone, even young and old, we all become boys and girls there, you know. So there was this little boy, Professor Radha Krishna, also sitting with his chocolate tray. And then Swami scooped up a handful of turmeric rice, chocolate, and threw it on everyone. And Rajgopal, despite his being a fantastic athlete, that day he couldn't even catch one chocolate. Not even one. Everything fell off, and people grabbed at the chocolates, at the rice. Everything people took away. He didn't get anything, and there were tears in his eyes. As Swami walked out towards the devotees' line, towards the outer veranda, Swami started throwing chocolates towards that direction. By that time, Rajgopal was like, I had to console him. Doesn't matter, Swami is coming back again, you know. By that time, Swami threw a handful of chocolate towards the students sitting outside there. This was definitely happening not in the Kulwant Hall, but the open ground that we used to have in Prashant Land. One lone chocolate, defying all the law of motion, it just flew back and then fell on Rajgopal's lap. And he had his darshan. So that was a beautiful instance of... So I was telling you about the chunam, tarpatri, and the chocolate, about the pan box. So this is the story of that pan box. What happened was, Mr. Tarpatri was in Puttaparthi, the merchant from Tarpatri, and he was inside Swami's interview room, waiting for Swami to come down. He had that exclusive opportunity. There are a lot of people, for reasons known only to Swami, they are drawn so close to Bhagwan, despite that denying him, saying that, no, Swami, I don't want you now. And Swami says, you must want me, come on, at least I want you, come here. So he was drawn so close to Bhagwan, he was right inside the interview room. Professor Kasturi was standing there. Swami was still upstairs. And then this gentleman, he saw the pan box. And he couldn't resist the temptation of eating good pan. So he picked up the box, opened it, made a good sizable pan for himself out of Swami's pan box and ate it. And when he did that, Professor Kasturi was aghast. How can you do this? This sacrilege. He said, how can you do this? You shouldn't do that. He said, he is definitely God for you. We all revere him. But you know, in terms of pan, both of us, we have the same addiction, is it? He also is addicted to pan. I also eat pan. What is wrong in eating pan from his box? After all, I am just taking, and this chunam, I have brought it myself, you know. So when he did this, by the time Swami came down, and without a word of reproach, Swami went towards the pan box, and quietly he made a small pan for himself. And you know, when Swami would place the pan in his mouth, even that act used to be so delicate. Just made a pan, placed it delicately in his mouth, and kept chewing. It was quite a sizable pan, that's what Professor Kasturi tells us. And then Swami kept eating the pan, chewing the pan, and all of a sudden, Swami looked at this merchant from Tadpatri, and he vomited out the pan, whatever he was chewing, right on his palm. He just brought it out. And every particle of that pan had turned into gems. The most precious gems, Professor Kasturi tells us that there were so many colors in that. They were red, they were ruby-like things, but all gems, and they were all sparkling. And Swami looked at Tadpatri ji and said, "Can you also do this?" Then Swami said, "If you can also do this, then you can steal from my pan box," Swami said. So considerate. Way back in, when Swami, did I tell you about Professor Kamodhani last time? Brahmarishi Kamodhani? You heard about Brahmarishi Kamodhani? The first time he came to Swami was when Swami conducted the first Veda Purush Sapta Gyan Yagya. What was the year? Around 1964 to 65. And Brahmarishi was invited. On invitation, Brahmarishi had come as the Agnihotra to preside over the yagyam, the sacrifice. And Swami used to tell about Brahmarishi Kamodhani as a true Chaturvedi. Because all the other names, there are a lot of Chaturvedis, Swami would say, in the world, who don't know anything about the Vedas. There are Dvivedis also, Trivedi, Chaturvedi, it's only a name. But here is a man who has practiced all the Vedas in his life, he remembers all the Vedic scripture, verbatim he remembers. Yeah, he can chant it backwards. And then all the Ghanam part and everything he can do. So, when Kamodhani ji, Brahmarishi Kamodhani came there, he came there as a priest, as a very enlightened priest he came there. And then on the last day of the Veda Purush Sapta Gyan Yagya, Swami was just so young. 64, what was Swami's age? Can you imagine? Around? 38 or something. And at that age, Swami came on the final day as the Veda Purusha. And all the rishis, all the pandits, all the priests who had come there, they had to touch his feet and bow down at his feet. Because he is there as the Veda Purusha. Swami Kamodhani, Brahmarishi Kamodhani, he thought that he had been defiled by the touch of Swami. Because he had touched the feet of someone who was lesser than him caste-wise. Who was a lower caste. He thought he was a Brahmin. And here was a Kshatriya. Swami was a Kshatriya. So he went to Chitravati to bathe in the river. To cleanse himself. So he was doing that. And after a lot of mantric incantations and cleansing, he came back to the mandir. And Swami was waiting for him on the portico. And the moment he came there, Swami said, "Kamodhani ra, kara," called him. And then Swami said, "See how you look. What you look like, just see here." On Swami's palm, Swami showed him like a television screen. Swami showed him doing this and then dipping himself in the Chitravati river. And Swami said, "See how comical you look." Then Swami told him, "If this exercise can bring you illumination and enlightenment, all the fishes are already delivered, enlightened, resurrected. Everything good has happened to the fishes because they are all the time in that water." And then from that day onwards, Swami Kamodhani, Brahmarishi, because I shared the space with him. He was my grandmother's next door neighbor in Prashanti Nilayam. So for 4 long years we lived together and he was just the next door. Such a great saint was living occupying the quarters next door. So Brahma Rishi Kamodhani, since that day, didn't leave Puttaparthi. Once or twice he went back to his place, but then he was all the time in Puttaparthi till he left his body around 102 years old, when he was 102 years old. And on Vaikuntha Ekadashi, Brahma Muhurtam, he left his body. So this was Kamodhani, a very great soul who lived in Puttaparthi. There are so many such stories you keep telling. One day we were sitting for Swami's, waiting for bhajan to begin in Puttaparthi. And all of a sudden Swami said, "She's coming." And then just a few seconds after Swami said, a huge Jat lady, she just almost lunged on Swami and tried to catch Swami. She came from the lady's side inside the mandir and tried to hold Swami. And then what Swami did was, one of the boys just got up and tried to disentangle Swami and that lady, tried to pull her out. But when he tried to do that, he just lifted that boy, that student, a huge guy, he just lifted him and almost pushed him on the students. She was so strong. A huge Jat lady. Jat is, a clan, they live in Haryana. Haryanvis, And then what Swami did was, Swami delivered two tiny slaps on her cheek and she fell at Swami's lotus feet. And by the time, Sevadals all came from outside, pulled her out from there. And Swami kept telling, "Don't do anything, don't harm her, don't do anything to her, she hasn't done anything wrong." This is how Swami saved her. But then Swami said, "This pagal woman, this mad woman, she has waited for so many lives for this one opportunity, for this one chance. In this lifetime, she has been craving and craving and craving to touch my feet, to kiss my feet. She has been craving for a whole lifetime, and today she got her wish fulfilled," Swami said. Then all of a sudden, Swami looked at the students, and especially the boy whom she almost picked up and threw him. Swami said, "Are you a man?" Swami asked him. So he said, "Yes, Swami." "No, Swami, we are boys, Swami," he said. Swami said, "Just by wearing a pant and a shirt, do you qualify yourself to be a man? That woman just picked you up and threw you there like a rag doll." Then Swami that day said, "All of you are Prakritis. I am the only Purusha. God is the only Purusha. You are all Prakritis," he said. It was a great moment, because very seldom we get to hear Swami declaring that, "I am God, I am the Purusha." Hardly you get to hear this from Swami himself, directly from his mouth. Most of the time he is asking you about sambar and rasam. But here is Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, once in a while, he's just like the sun, peeping out of the clouds. And then it's so beautiful. Is there a bhajan that we could do together? This is a composition of Professor Shyam Srivastavji. I was telling you about Shyam Srivastavji, whom Swami, at a point in time, Swami stopped looking at him. Swami stopped talking to him. Swami even stopped his bhajan singing in the mandir. And that was the time he composed the maximum number of these beautiful bhajans, full of pathos. Beautiful bhajan. See. हर पल हर क्षण भूल करे हम पग पग ठो कर खाए एक पग आगे दो पग पीछे साए तुम तक कैसे आए करुणा सागर परम दयालु साईं भगत वसन तेरो नाम ओ साईं भगत वसन तेरो नाम ओ साईं
na o sai.
There is one bhajan which was composed right on the platform, on the stage, by the composer in Tokyo, in Japan. This was happening in an army cantonment, and the Japanese army, they didn't understand any of this bhajans in Sanskrit, the way we sing. They didn't understand. They couldn't sing. So they said that, why don't you sing something that relates to us? May not be in terms of language, but why don't you sing a song that almost sounds like us, you know? So this composer, Devnath Mukherjee, he just sat there praying to Bhagwan, and out came this bhajan. This bhajan, even as he was singing, the bhajan was getting composed. It was such a beautiful sight. Normally the military type of, beat. 1, 2, 3, 4, like.
Hari Om Tat Sat Namah Shivaya. Hari Om Tat Sat Namah Shivaya. Sai Om Tat Sat Namah Shivaya. Sai Om Tat Sat Namah Shivaya. Hari Om Tat Sat Namah Shivaya. Shiva Shiva Shivaya Namah Shivaya. Sai Om Tat Sat Namah Shivaya.
In conclusion, when we think about Sai Sai again, because Swami has shown us, even right in this hall, when we started thinking about Sai, and when we started racking our brains, what could be Sai, what could be the message meant for me, she came out with a beautiful thing, he came out with a beautiful meaning of Sai. But ultimately Sai is Sai and I. That beautiful song, let's sing together. I keep feeling your love in me. Yes, we'll all sing together.
I keep feeling your love in me over and over again. I keep feeling your love in me over and over again. And it's sweeter and sweeter as the days go by.
My sigh and I. It's so beautifully rhymed and at the same time so beautifully aligned. And this alignment is so all about our spiritual life. Swami has made everything so simple and easy for us. Swami says, my looks are simple, my gait is simple, my speech is simple, my teachings are simple. In fact, Swami is the very personification of simplicity. Just how could you otherwise define simplicity, clad in just one robe? And then imagine when Swami was, the other day I was telling one or two of our brothers there, that when Swami was seen removing the button, the gold small two studs out of his robe to put it on a new robe that he was wearing that day. Professor Kasturi said, Swami, why don't you keep a spare? And Swami said, what would I do with a spare? Because I have only two holes in that robe. So practical. And that simplicity, just barefooted, he would walk everywhere. And despite that, he would all the time look so complete and whole. Just imagine you and me walking barefooted in New York City. What would people think about us? Maybe somebody would throw a dollar at you and say that, oh, I think this guy is in need. But then Swami all the time looked so complete and whole, wearing just that robe and a pitambaram. And then the other thing that always intrigues me, that we have to, small things that sometimes escapes our thoughts, you know. When Swami just looks at all of us, the whole crowd, it could be the multitude sitting there, maybe 10,000 people, 100,000 people sitting there, squatting there in the ground, on the grounds of Puttaparthi. And in Abbotsbury or Bombay, where when Swami would go, the teeming, you know, crowd would be there, thronging the place. And Swami would look at each other, each person, everywhere, just a sweeping glance, just like showering His mercy on everyone. And even a person seated on top of a, perched on top of a tree, he would feel that Swami looked at me directly. I had eye contact with Swami. Is it possible for any human being to do this? Just look at everyone and make everyone feel that he has looked at me. Can you do it? I tried it out. It doesn't happen. Sometimes even the guy whom I'm looking at, he doesn't really feel that I'm looking at him. And here is Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, casting his look, that omni look at everyone, and making everyone feel very special. And such is the merciful grace of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. And one last story about the alignment part of it only. I'll just cut it very short. I was in Vrindavan. I wanted to be in Vrindavan after I completed my PhD. So as a part of the staff there, teaching staff, I thought, how would it be to be there? Out of His grace, He allowed me there. And that day, when everyone went in the Tri Vrindavan for the evening session, we went and stood right at the back. Because we thought that we have taken our share of chance. It's the chance for this generation now to be near Bhagwan. So this is what actually entered my head. I was also standing right at the back. And suddenly Swami called out, Sikkim ka pagal kidhar hai? No, there were so many Sikkimese boys at that time. But again, the private thing comes to you. I started thinking that it must be me. So I said, Swami, I'm here. And luckily for me, it was Swami meant me only that day. Otherwise, there were so many other Sikkim boys, I could have kept quiet and thought that maybe Swami was calling one of the students from Sikkim. But then when Swami said, why don't you come here? Why are you standing right at the back? So all the boys made way for me. And I just walked past them, in between them. And then there was no space for me to stand right in front of him. So I stood by his side. And then Swami said, Kahe ko udhar itna dur khada hota hai? Idhar kahe ko nahi aaya? Why didn't you come near me? I said, Swami, there was no place for me here. And you know what Swami said? Then how did this boy get a place here? The boy who was sitting right in front of him, Swami pointed at him and said, how did he get a place here then? Then I told Swami, Swami, he ran, Swami. Because all the boys run. They run like cattle and sheep, you know, after Swami. They don't see left, front, back, center. They just run after Swami. When Swami gives the call, it's a whole horde of, you know, students running towards Swami. And then I said, Swami, he ran. Swami looked at me and said, why didn't you run? Then that very moment, I understood what Swami was telling me. I was in tears. That is what we need to do in life. We have to run. And then when we run, we have to be focused on Bhagwan and then run. And then Swami said, still, the alignment is not complete, Swami said. Abhi bhi thik nahi hai position, Swami said. Tu idhar khada hai, you are standing here. I can't see you, you can't see me. I am not reflected in your eyes, you are not reflected in my eyes, Swami said. Stand here. So I stood right in front of him on my knees. I was kneeling down there. Swami said, haan, ab position thik hai. Idhar dekha, meri aankh mein. In Swami's eyes, I could see myself. And Swami said, I can see myself in you. So you in me, I in you is when you align yourself properly to God. That is why wherever we are, that is Prashanti Nilayam. Wherever we are is Sai, because it all depends upon you and me to align ourselves. Because He is the immovable, you know, entity. He is the eternal principle. If my alignment to Him is correct, then I'm all the time living in Him, I'm living with Him, I'm all the time watching Him, I'm being washed over by Him, I'm all the time with Him. So with these few, many words, I'll just say Sai Ram to all of you. Thank you so much. Yes, sir.
Sundara
Kamala Manohar Anu.
शयन हरि
भवभयभञ्जन
शेष शयन हरि प्रणवस्वरूप नारायण
प्रणवस्वरूप
नारायण राजीवलोचन आदि सनातन
राजीवलोचन आदि सनातन
बन्ध विमोचन नारायण
बन्ध विमोचन नारायण
पद्मनाभ प्रभु कमला मनोहर
पद्मनाभ प्रभु कमला मनोहर
वैकुंठ पते शयन हरि प्रणवस्वरूप नारायण